Welcome to episode 126 of The Worst People We Know. I'm Sean.
I'm Mike.
And I'm Jeff.
In today's episode, we'll be talking about Biden's broadband plan, a little update on the cryptocurrency corner, and my rant about housing becoming too expensive. But before we get into that, Jeff, you're back in Florida, and I heard some scary news there. I wondered how scary it was locally about potential radioactive waste leaking from a wastewater plant.
So I also heard about this, although just sort of recently through my family, because there are, you know, toddlers with us. The whole family is in Florida for Easter.
They don't like radioactive waste.
So there's two things going on. There's the red tide, which is a constant thing because everyone over-fertilizes everything. And it all goes into the bay, and then you get some crazy algae blooms that like make your eyes burn when you go to the beach. We haven't been to the beach. I don't know if that's true, but or if it's that bad. But the other thing was this radioactive waste thing leaking into the bay, which I don't know. I mean, people are talking about it.
It seems like those are two things that would fix each other, don't you think?
That's a good point. Cancel each other maybe out. It would make it worse. Maybe we got mutant red tide now.
That would be bad. I'm going to be an optimist, and I'm going to say that we're going to have one of those situations where you just unleash wave after wave of gorillas that eat the pigeon-eating snakes.
Yeah.
He'll be fine. That'll be worse. We'll have gorillas then. Oh, we just wait till winter. They'll freeze to death, Lisa.
Isn't that human solution to everything? It's like, just release something worse that'll kill that thing that we just released.
Perfect. Oh, we have too many chemicals in the air. Just spray a new chemical that pulls that chemical down.
Cancel
Radioactive waste cancels the chemicals out. Yeah, totally.
We call it renews it. It's fine.
I don't know what the full story with that is, but yeah, people are talking about it and probably somewhat worried about it. I don't know.
There's an evacuation zone for like 300 houses in the Tampa area.
Oh, well, we're far enough from that I'm not too worried.
I think bigger concern is if it, like, they're in these protected by levees, earthen dams, like all around the wastewater plant. I used to work not so much on projects like this, but with a guy who did a lot of risk assessments for like levee breaches in exactly this situation. So when I saw the story, I immediately thought of him. I think the bigger concern was, obviously if it gets out, it gets out everywhere. The people impacted there, but that it would just contaminate onward for all the groundwater all around, because it's supposed to be in that protected area. And then the cleanup would be, I think, would obviously have a lot.
Is it a nuclear longer-term impact. Plant?
I think it's like a wastewater treatment plant. So I didn't really understand why, when I heard the headline, it said it was radioactive, but who knows
why there's radioactive waste. Like
one story I saw said it's as acidic as black coffee, which doesn't seem like, it's not going to melt the skin off my body. Like,
right.
It probably would burn my eyes maybe, but
it seems like it's not bookcase coffee, obviously.
Not that delicious.
I'm sorry, I heard the word delicious. What I heard was that there were 400 million gallons or something, and it was leaking 2 to 3 million gallons a day. Oof. And they were pumping out somewhere in the neighborhood of like 40 million gallons a day to try and prevent it from whatever craziness is happening. So it's going to take like 10 days, but they're like, hey, if this thing breaks, we're all effed.
Well, we'll see. I mean, maybe if I have three arms next week, I'll let you know.
Your theory is incorrect, Michael. That is the big concern, that it's rich in nitrogen and phosphorus that will feed the red tide and will actually cause it to grow stronger.
Oh, God.
Just like the Hulk, you know? Yeah.
Well, we'll get some red tide eaters, whatever they are.
Whatever those
Hopefully
are.
Freeze to death in the winter. All right.
Well,
hey, nice. Are you a Biden broadband plan fan? Jeff?
Stan?
You know, so far, given the plan is not, completely solidified, I am a fan. So Biden announced his broadband plan. It's an unprecedented $100 billion spending plan on infrastructure, which includes the internet and broadband. I guess, is $100 billion only for broadband? Maybe it is. I think
I would
imagine
that's true because he has a $2.2 billion plan for infrastructure. And let me tell you how much I know about this plan.
Yeah,
$2.2 trillion. Yeah, that's with a T. Yeah, yeah. So this $100 billion is definitely
just for the internet.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So let me tell you what I like about this plan. I've read one line summary of this story that you put in the outline, and it says, "This will be met by fierce resistance by telecoms," which means it's got to be actually good for human beings.
Yeah.
If telecoms hate it, it's got to be good. That's the summary of the story.
Well, there's a lot to like, and you've missed and there's a lot to like for internet users. So yeah, it's like this is
well, but I'm are there really that user? Many internet users? Yeah. Really, how many of those are there out there?
So here's the thing with this whole, you know, I'm generally a fan more so of competition and more so of like open markets than I am of the government taking things over.
Sure.
But internet specifically, where the fuck is the competition? There's no competition. Well, it's a monopoly that was granted to
monopolies. Yeah.
Yeah. And I get why that happened, right? I mean, these companies do have to, they had to lay actual cable to everyone's house. And you got to like, in order, if they're going to put in that investment, there has to be some payoff. But that has happened. They aren't really doing a very great job.
Jack, I don't think you understand. The cable's already been laid.
Yes, exactly.
We need to innovate. We're business people. Jack, the cable has already been laid.
So it's sort of like there's, you know, you're basically just holding up a monopoly. And in my experience, I don't think I've ever hated a company more than I hated Time Warner Cable living in New York City. And even in New Jersey, our broadband cable, you cannot get more than 10 meg upload speed, which as someone who edits large audio files and tries to upload them is infuriating. We have five. We have 100 down, which is perfectly adequate, if not more than adequate, and five up, and it's pitiful. And this day and age with all Zoom and everything else, and it's not even that the cable company is doing that on purpose to screw you over. It's that their infrastructure wasn't set up in the way that they could even do it if they wanted to.
Like, well, it seems likely it has to do with gravity.
Definitely something about gravity for sure.
So they can't just like make it like a 50-50 split.
No, like they can't just switch that over. They would have to, it would require like a big infrastructure push, and they just haven't, they should have done it by now, but they haven't because they're prioritizing, you know, they want to prioritize getting you the download, but they're back end.
Can I tell you what the dumb guy in my, like the dumb guy brain in my head is saying? He's picturing like a PVC pipe in the street in front of his house in Long Valley that has like 9 wires going into his house and one coming out. Like that's basically like what he's seeing.
It's possible. Like I think it's more of like the, on the like
the red cables can only take it once into your house, Mike, and the green cables can only take it out of your house. I mean, that's
just standard color. That's how I assume. Yeah.
So Biden,
and green must be a more expensive color.
The thing that these guys aren't going to like in Biden's plan is basically that he is prioritizing. Now, I shouldn't say. Well, yeah, he's kind of prioritizing municipal-run broadband infrastructures. Yeah. He's trying to get broadband to every household in America, which I think everyone's pro that. He hasn't really defined what high-speed internet is or broadband is, like what the limit on that is. But you'd imagine it's at least 20 or 50 megabits.
I don't know, he's pretty old. It could be like 4800 baud.
Can I take you into the Wayback Machine for a second?
Sure.
Yeah.
In the Wayback times when Mike Flynn was a good person, he ran into a special lady named Julia Bryn Flynn. We were working at a nonprofit in the Philadelphia area of the United States of America. Circa 2004, 2005. The city of Philadelphia, also, quote, colloquially? Is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's known, its nickname, City of Brotherly Love. They said, you know what our brothers love? High-speed internet.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to make high-speed internet a municipal utility. There's going to be high-speed Wi-Fi throughout this whole city, and we're going to be one of these people that are the pioneers of this. And do you know who the biggest, one of like the top five employers in Philadelphia is?
Verizon.
Yeah.
No, Comcast.
Comcast.
Comcast said, hey, that's a great plan. You want to offer $5 a month internet over Wi-Fi to everyone in your city? Fuck you. We'll leave the city, assholes.
Yeah.
We employ 60,000 people, and you can suck it. And so they shelved that plan.
Yeah.
Silver Spring, Maryland had it for a while when I started working there.
I guess it would be nice, but at this point, like,
it doesn't matter.
Does Wi-Fi matter? I mean, yeah. You're walking around.
I learned on my last day of living in San Francisco that all the, I think, who's the internet provider up there? No, I forget. Was it
San Francisco?
Which one?
In San Francisco.
No, it's Comcast.
Is it Comcast?
Yeah.
Whoever it was.
Xfinity.
Yeah, Xfinity. That's why I never know like what the name. I have Spectrum down here, which I think is, I don't know what.
That's Time Warner.
Something called Monkey. Yeah,
Spectrum.
Something called Monkey Brains too, which I think Monkey Brains may have bought that thing that you had, which is Wave.
So Monkey Brains was a local thing inside San Francisco. The nice thing about San Francisco was they either somehow allowed, or maybe there was just the market for all of these private internet providers.
Yeah. There were more of them there.
I had one that was, I've told you this story before, limited. I had 100 gig down and up for $50 a month. And I was like, well, this is just the most amazing thing I could ever want. And then they're like, yeah, for free, we're just going to move it to 300 gig up and down. And I'm like, okay. And then 6 months later, they're like, it's a gig now. It's a gig. Like, okay.
But only certain people could get that. I think if it was like rolled out citywide, there'd be a lot of more resistance to it. But what I was going to say, I learned on the last day of living there that all the Xfinity routers have like an Xfinity network that broadcast out. So in a city like San Francisco where things are so dense, you can turn them off, but a lot of people don't know. If you've got Spectrum or Xfinity there, you can just log. You essentially have free public Wi-Fi because there's enough apartments and houses that have modems on.
Free public Wi-Fi if you're a Comcast customer.
If you're a customer. Yeah. So not entirely free, but you've got that. Like that makes more sense to me than, I don't think a city needs to install at this point because the wireless speeds are so sufficient. Yeah, like nobody's hurting for that. Maybe a very rural town. I guess we're not thinking of that, but.
Well, and SpaceX, I think that's solve that. Like these things aren't really problems in big cities, right? Like this, there's broadband, there's competition in broadband, there's multiple players. But if you're in the suburbs even, and definitely in your more rural, it is an issue. You can't get it at all to some extent now that like SpaceX and some of these other people are trying to do real good satellite internet that might be changing. But it's good, right? It's good that they're trying to get everyone internet, and they're trying to get it for like a reasonable price is nice. One of the things in here that they're saying that the broadband companies aren't going to like is forcing price transparency, which is also a really big annoyance. I mean, they're like, oh, it's super cheap for like 3 months, and then we're just going to randomly.
I have no idea what I get things in the mail once a week at least from Spectrum. Where you can be getting this better rate or this one, but I have no idea what I'm paying for. No, like I do know what I pay now, but it's higher than the rate I signed up for. And if you try and change the price, you go online and change your plan. You can only buy a more expensive one. If you want to downgrade, you have to call them up and wait on hold forever. Yeah. It's just like the most pathetic customer experience. And they're all like that, I think, because there's no competition.
They were giving us some, and now given this is a while ago, although I doubt it's changed, but in New York, they were telling us our internet was bad because of the wires in our building, and that's our problem. It's like, how is that my problem? I pay you for a service into my home, and you're telling me somewhere between my home and where you take over, it's gone wrong, and that's my problem.
To Spectrum's credit, that happened here. Where I live, and they came out, and I didn't have to pay anything. I tipped the guy because he said he only had to bring it into my unit, not to my where my TV is or where the outlet is, which is another like 25-foot run. So he's like, oh, you need to call up and there's another guy that'll come and do this for you. And I'm just thinking like, I'm going to have a half complete job for 2 weeks as I wait for another tech to come. I'm like, what's the way we can work around this? And then he's like, oh, if you give a tip or something.
So
like,
he was saying that he could bring the like cable into your apartment on the other side.
He's the guy that does the outside of the wall. He just does that. There's another guy that does inside your unit.
This is a left Twix problem.
Exactly. Yeah.
He did a fantastic job when I paid him another $40. Like he ran that line in. You wouldn't know that he was an outside guy, is all I'm saying. Like he did a great job on the inside.
I lived in Hoboken for a couple of years, and the beauty of living in an apartment run by a slumlord was I called up and said, hey, I'd like to get Verizon Fios instead of Comcast or Time Warner or whatever was offered there. And I was like, is that okay? They're going to have to run cables. And he's like, I don't know what that is. I don't care. And I'm like, okay, great. Yeah. And they literally drilled a hole through the brick front facade.
Oh, I was 100% going to tell you that's exactly what my brother did too. Same thing in Pittsburgh. It's like the guy just drilled a hole into his bedroom and he's like, here's your Wi-Fi or your high speed internet. You're good. Yeah.
Yeah. That was amazing.
No problem.
So yeah, no, I think this is broadband at this point should be a utility, right? It's like electricity.
Yeah. You can't have, it's like in economics, they talk about things that are natural monopolies just because of the barriers to entry are too high.
Right.
So like common examples are public utilities because it doesn't make sense for everybody to run their own wires down the street, airports. So anything like that where it's like there's not just the nature of the business is going to be anti-competitive. So that makes sense. Like roads, if that wasn't a public utility, it'd be a disaster if everybody's just building a road and charging a different price.
Yep. No, they're all private roads. Yeah. Everyone's got to get a new road paved in. Yeah.
But you could so similar with roads, there are users, there are private companies that can then benefit from that. So if you've created this capacity, it's a little bit harder to think of. I don't know it seems like with a broadband company, there's obviously more to the network than the wires, but it seems like that's a lot of what's going on there versus like, if you think about power generation, you could have the grid as a public utility, but everybody could contribute and generate, and you could put solar panels on your roof and sell your power back to the grid. Yeah. But so there's still
like a question about that. Here's can we jump into our like one of our classic segues for a second?
Yeah.
Why are there not batteries in every single home?
I've been ranting about this for a year.
I am long on Tesla because they'll eventually have to be that way, and that stock's going to be like $2,000. $5,000 is sure.
But like solely regardless of like expense. Whether
I've been looking not cheap at enough. This cuz I want I kind of want my parents
cuz the batteries aren't as cheap as like rolling up a new fucking coal-powered power plant or something. No, but
the way the costs are distributed, like what you would have to pay to put a battery system in your house, like people think about like where we grew up, generators, like my family never had one. Some people did, and that was kind of like you're going to lose power maybe once or twice a year, and maybe it'll go out for like an extended period of time, a few days. Are you going to invest in that? Some people did, some people didn't.
Like after Hurricane Sandy, I got a guy that I used to play soccer with who's in New Jersey. Oh, well, I got another guy who I do a podcast with, same situation. they bought a bunch of generators. I think yours is gas. He's got a propane generator that he put in his backyard that can run his house for 10 days or something.
Well, so this is and that's exactly what happens is I think the people go to a generator because they seem to think that a generator is like this never-ending source of power, which in their defense, if you could buy enough big enough propane tank, it sort of is. It could probably run your house for a week or two. But a lot of people have those.
But even still, like that wouldn't even solve the Hurricane Sandy situation.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Yeah. So the battery,
nobody buys. Solar. My point is like nobody buys those to begin with. So there's no market. If generator penetration was at like 80%, then people would probably be looking for a substitute. But nobody cares about that because the power is so reliable.
Well, and Power is so reliable, and people, I think that is the answer, right? It's people want to pay on a per month basis instead of upfront. Yeah. And so a battery, I've looked at battery systems because I've sized them for my family, both my parents and my sister and her husband, just because they've lost power. My sister lost power during Sandy for like a week and a half, I think, and that became a real issue. And so now batteries themselves, like the Tesla Powerwall, I think it's say it's $5,000. I think it might be more than that, but $5,000,
it's definitely more if you sew three of them together, which is the max battery that they let you do.
And that's the thing, is it's $5,000 for 13 kilowatt hours of battery. The average home, I think, uses like 20 to 30 kilowatt hours in a day. And so if you really want to do it for like a total home replacement that'll last a couple days, you need like 5 or 6 of them. And you're saying they only do 3.
But this is what I'm saying, like, the utilities, regardless of like the, you know, catastrophic problem and all these other things.
Yeah, because smooth peak demand.
Yeah.
That's exactly the thing. Smoothing peak demand, right? Because like you have literally, you're spinning up extra fucking like gigantic energy capacity, like production, like coal-fired power plants or whatever fired power plants during like the peak hours, when you're like, why don't you just run that shit off battery?
Well,
and then you're smoothed all over.
Yeah, and spend it, or even if you install it like locally, but have that as like a cost sharing program with
consumers. That's where I guess it probably is, if you like multiply 3,000 across, let's just say 3,000 customers time over, but like even 3,000 divided by, because the things are going to last 30 years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're talking about $100 a year, maybe? Like, is it per customer? I guess that probably is probably still more expensive when you do the math.
Well, and if you want to do that, there was no real reason for it previously, right? Like the grid is honestly amazing. Like the fact that it is like the biggest machine that we've ever built, and it is absolutely amazing. But these days, especially because power generation at the home with solar and wind and batteries and everything is getting cheaper, and you have all of these other influences like the fires in California and the storms in the Northeast and all this stuff, it's like, I think this is the way it's going to go, right? Everyone will have batteries in their house and solar of some sort. And then the power companies do benefit from that. But that wasn't the model, because that wasn't ever a thing. Like batteries weren't a thing for them. They were always thinking about it, like, how many more power plants do we need?
Yeah, we can just throw more coal in here and power up the whole block. Don't worry about it, guys.
Yep. Problem solved.
Yep. And that kind of goes back to like the whole broadband thing, where it's like, so the grid itself, right? The wires to your home are maybe, I don't know who actually owns those, but maybe that's like a public utility. And then private companies can own that one coal-fired power plant or another coal-fired power plant. And maybe they're more efficient and they sell power for cheaper to the grid itself. And that's really how the internet should work. Like if I want to just sign up and have the wires run to my house, but use someone else's internet, great.
Yeah,
that's fine. I'm fine with that. But like that would actually give competition versus Comcast ran these wires, so you have to go through those. They're the only provider. That's tough luck, buddy. And let's keep them as a monopoly because we favor competition. What? yeah,
I don't know. Because they're influential. This is Jeff. My favorite thing about this article, it's from Wired. It starts off and says, about how it's got some great things in the plan, but it's sure to meet fierce resistance from cable and telecom lobby groups and Republicans. So it's just like, nothing makes sense.
The same. Right?
No, but to his point, like that's the competition side. Like nobody actually thinks logically through this, or like this is going to hurt these big companies that rely on competition to make all their money.
Right.
Like, wait, what? No.
Yeah.
This doesn't make any sense, people.
I think that's a theme we've hit on a lot, is like, I think private enterprise and capitalism works better in most situations, but there are some things that a government should run, and utilities, one of these things that we think everyone should have, is one of those things. And internet is now become that, right? Like, just like electricity.
Yeah. Well, especially, I mean, after this, like, where people literally have to live off of, like, that became like school. Like, you wouldn't be like, oh, well, the school buses, we're going to privatize all those. The schools are public, but the school buses are private. So good luck getting to school.
We can get 15 kids to your house anytime we want, but only one can go to school from your house at a given time. That makes sense, right? Yeah. Anyway. So, yeah, we'll see. Hopefully this kind of happens. Obviously, Agent Pi.
So he's still around. Or he's gone.
No, he's gone. He resigned. Okay. Like, everyone resigned.
Did he keep his mug?
He probably still has that mug, I'm sure.
Okay.
Maybe he has a bigger one now.
What was his mug?
Like a big Reese's peanut butter cup mug or something?
Yeah. It was an oversized Reese's peanut butter cup.
Comically large.
Like, he was doing it to be funny. It was like, oh, I'm the office funny guy, and it's like, you are the chairman of the FCC, you douchebag. Like, and then John Oliver got an even bigger one and was making fun of him, which was pretty funny. But anyway, he, you know, deregulated stuff, basically repealed a bunch of net neutrality stuff, and this is all rolled up into that. So we'll see. I mean, it would be great if that happened. And I would think that more people, you know, more Republicans in rural areas, if you're bringing them broadband, would be pretty freaking happy about this. But who knows? Who knows these days?
Elon Musk, though, you think he's upset about it?
I don't think so. I think I'm not sure he gets really caught up in any of this. Like, satellite is sort of its own thing. I guess
everybody had reliable broadband.
But realistically, that's not going to happen for another 10 years, right?
Yeah.
Like, everyone.
Well, and there's a whole planet, too.
There's a whole planet, exactly.
One country.
Right. Yeah. So, we'll see. See how it goes. Crypto Corner?
Should we take a turn in the Crypto Corner? Crypto Corner music.
We need to get some of that, yeah.
There's a lot of crypto stories here.
Yeah.
A lot of crypto.
Do you think that there's some billionaire breakdowns that we could have playing on top of the Crypto Corners?
I'm sure there is.
Are the Winklevies crypto billionaires yet?
I mean,
no, but at this point, they must have been Facebook billionaires.
They were 600 million.
They must be billionaires now.
But now they probably are, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they would have put it all in Bitcoin when it was at like $800. So they took their Facebook money in Bitcoin.
When they were big crypto guys, they had $100 million. Yeah,
I'm uncomfortable with the amount of research I find from like whatever their I hear things, I'm like, this sounds good, and then the sources like Winklevoss.
I don't know what year this article is from. Oh, 2021. They own approximately 1% of all Bitcoin.
Wow.
Current net worth as of 2021
which is over a billion.
Is approximately $1 billion.
Their joint net worth?
Tyler Winklevoss, so just one of the twins.
Oh.
Half of the Winklevi is worth $1 billion. So yeah, the other one's got to be worth close to that too. So yeah.
I wonder how much they would be worth if they held their Facebook stock.
So it said they had to have more than the ratio. They had 65 million in cash and Facebook shares. So the total between the two, but I don't know what each one.
That's what they got in the that's what they got in the settlement?
Yes, but I don't know like the ratio of shares to.
Okay, that's not that much. I thought that they had like 600 million, but 65 million is.
And they apparently bought Bitcoin at $8.
I think really they started buying into it. That was their problem.
Mm.
You know, wait till Zuck was worth like 40 billion and he'd easily pay them $1 billion just to go away. Who gives a crap?
Oh, yeah. I think that's
true. Well, what did he pay for Instagram?
How many Instagrams do you want?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Well, how do I make problems go away?
Facebook is currently $872 billion. Holy shit, man. Yeah, Facebook is fucking crazy.
So, I mean, something bigger than Facebook is China.
China.
And that's our first story in Crypto Corner this week. China is creating its own digital currency, the first for a major economy. They're officially creating. And so I saw this and I was like, well, not super surprised. China is usually sort of pushing the boundaries on these things. And they can because they have their crazy, you know, dictator type government. But
yeah,
they're
also
pretty
tech forward.
Buy-in
from all the banks.
Right.
Telecom companies.
They don't need buy-in for anything because they just disappear those people. Like they did with Jack Ma. So, but like, they're doing this and I was like, well, what's, like, why? Like, what does that change? Like, isn't currency already kind of digital? I mean, I'm using credit cards. I'm moving money
around.
They're
cutting out the middleman on the crypto side.
Right.
Because, and I think they, because they see it as a threat.
Well, so I think they want, I think their biggest things here are they want to track people, which they can do once it's digital. Because if you're using it on your phone, like they have direct access into like what you're using it for. But also they want to usurp, or at least as much as possible, usurp the US dollar in the world international currency exchange. Mm-hmm. Currently, the US dollar, in terms of like settling international debts, it makes up 88% of that exchange. The yuan, which is China's currency, makes up 4%, which is quite the disparity given how we're still a much bigger economy, but they're second and they're much, you know, they're much
but so many countries use like all of Panama is on the US dollar. Like just silly things like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's just the standard. That's the standard. And
it's like the gold standard for money.
And
it does feel like if you're like a little itty bitty company, country, like you're like, you know, this currency thing seems like a real pain in our ass, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and it's not as if I mean,
but it's also awesome. Don't forget about that.
Oh yeah,
if you're running the show, you're just like turn on the printer's just turning on for you. Like, but a lot of small countries screw that up too. Like,
mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I was gonna say is like, I think if you're a small country, like, you know, not even saying like a poor country, but just like literally a small one, it's like I don't even know how much benefit you get of like turning on like the money printer. You're like, oh, whatever, okay, this thing that nobody cared about that was a pain in the ass for everybody, now we got 10 times as much of it.
Hey, I mean, turning on the money printer worked pretty well for Bitcoin, so, and that's not even a country.
True. Well,
Bitcoin, but they don't turn on the money printer.
Well, it's on.
I mean, it did. It went just from turns zero off at a certain time
to 20 million Bitcoin. Yeah, and it's still on. But it will stop.
I guess because it's like explicit. Yeah. People know.
Yeah, exactly. So, but China,
everyone's excited about the euro.
Well, the euro, another example where I think the US probably saw it as a threat, right? It was like, "Oh, there's a lot of countries involved in this, like this could be a problem." The point this journal article, the Wall Street Journal article, is making about China is that if they have digital currency, like, I think if you're a small country now, you're going dollar, right? Like, why would you? Yeah. You would just de facto dollar. Everyone uses the dollar. It's easy. Mm-hmm. China, you're kind of picking a weird side. It only does 4% of everything. And like, then the US is going to be kind of like, oh, okay, you're doing that? Like, okay. Like, we're not going to play ball type thing.
Yeah.
But China, if China's digital, all of a sudden, especially China's making a big, we've talked about this a bit in the past, but China's making a big push towards Africa, right? Because they're this big developing nation. And if you go to like Kenya, China has just like funded roads and infrastructure and like everything just to be like friends of Africa. And like, everyone is now, as those countries kind of come up into the first world, they're going to be like, oh, well, we'll
that's
just
like
Chinese
their colonial
stuff.
System, but a nicer, exactly. a more appropriate, better version for the 21st century.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the currency will have no barriers.
Well, if it's right. On like and a phone. So now if it's all digital, like you could just have that currency and you could just switch it without having to go through some bullshit, you know, Western Union type thing.
Yeah.
It's a good idea. I think the US is probably not that far behind. But it is interesting to see China out there first doing this proactively, you know, in a way that is sort of not caring about the whole financial infrastructure that they currently have, you know.
Do you think that we'll need to have somebody take over the treasury that is less than 450 years old to
well, that's
to adopt this?
We were just talking about this before we started recording. It's like, it's great that like we're asking Janet Yellen what she thinks about Bitcoin. She's 80 yeah. years old or whatever she is. And like same with Warren Buffett. I mean, he's 85 years old. We're yeah. like, what do you think about Bitcoin? Oh, he doesn't like it? He favors freight railroads? Yeah, no shit. Like,
you know what one of my favorite things with Warren Buffett is like he's on stage and they're talking about the internet and he's like holding up this book. He goes, this is a book of the hundreds of companies that made cars at the turn of the century. And currently they're three. And that's what I think about the internet. And I was like, yeah, you founded like five of those companies. You're like a million. Of course, that's how it's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that is kind of the thing about, well, Warren Buffett in particular, I do kind of get a kick out of, because I think he's obviously brilliant and he knows what he's talking about. And I really, really respect him for saying, I don't know this, so I'm not involved. Like, I invest in freight yeah. railroads in America because that's what I know. I don't know anything yeah. about tech, and so I don't want to. Whereas I think the problem with people, but that doesn't stop the press from asking him, right?
First of all, Janet Yellen is also only 74 and a half.
Oh, okay. Well, so yeah. you know. Then she definitely, she's all.
She
about
definitely learned about it when she was in grad school. They were definitely covering crypto. Take that back.
Let's see. She graduated grad school in, well, undergrad, she probably graduated in 1966. Oh. So that's good.
Yeah.
But yeah. I do think that this forces the US to do this, right? Like the fact that China's doing it, and Sean made the point earlier, like, you know, Visa, MasterCard, Bank of America, all the banks are going to push back hard on this because, of course, they don't. Like our whole system is digital currency right now, but it all funnels through private institutions and they
not
get a cut.
Not Visa though. They're going to allow payments using stablecoin.
They're going to allow payments. Just,
oh, really?
Yeah. How does that work?
Using, that's just going to be a payment method they accept.
So, but will Instead they still of, charge like the, they'll still charge the
oh.
consumer or not the consumer, the retail.
Yep.
Like the store.
Yeah, they're not. I mean, they're still using their network. It's just like adding yeah. another currency to their network that's pegged. Right. A cryptocurrency is, it's essentially, so it's a USDC stablecoin. So it's pegged to the US dollar, but it's just
right.
Okay. So it's not the same as when if the Federal Reserve actually makes a digital dollar, so but it's essentially the same.
And that's the difference, right? Like that. And to answer the question I kind of posed in the beginning is, why? Like, what does this do for anyone when we can all use Apple Pay? We don't really care. Well, if I'm going to a coffee shop and I use Apple Pay through my Visa card, they get dinged for whatever it is, 3%, 2.5%, 3%, 3.5%, whatever it is.
Yeah.
They get dinged for that because Visa charges them that, and rightfully so. I mean, credit cards were a brilliant idea.
Yeah, I mean, Visa's got to pay Comcast, those assholes from Comcast, money to go across your network.
Like, exactly.
We got to pay Visa so they can pay Comcast.
And so, but if the US government or the Chinese government in this case had their own just like cash thing, you could use Apple Pay and just pay straight up cash. There'd be no charges on anyone's side,
but who's somebody's still got to process that? No, like, because I'm thinking, like, I use like Coinbase, it's still, it's a, there's a transaction. Maybe if I'm already into the crypto, then it doesn't matter because you're just moving that around versus exchanging it from one currency to another.
So if you were paying with Bitcoin, there would be a transaction fee,
yeah,
assuming like a steady state. You know, right now maybe there wouldn't be a transaction fee because there's still giving away Bitcoin because it's still not we're not to the 20 million cap, but a stable state, maybe you would definitely be charged a transaction fee for
like an Ethereum transaction. I'm thinking like there's just something I forget what they call it, gas in Ethereum, where it's like the price you pay for somebody to validate your
someone needs to validate it, right? There's someone needs to like there needs to be something behind that. Now, I don't know, does the Chinese government just do that for free? Like, I don't know. Maybe. I think they might.
Oh, I think they saw Facebook's business model. Yeah, exactly. They saw Facebook's business model and said, oh, if we could see exactly how everyone's transacting everything, we'll let you do it for free in quotation marks. Like, well, yeah.
And that was one of the points this article made on the negative side of this is, okay, so now China can track everything you spend money on. They can also just deduct. This article used the example of jaywalking. If we have a camera network in the city and we know we can identify you specifically as like jaywalking, well, there's a fine, $10 for jaywalking. We just subtract it from your balance. Like you're done.
Perfect.
Like there's no ticket. There's no you paying it. There's no decisions. It's just gone.
So like rich people can go around acting like complete assholes with immunity, and and poor people are like fearful of any action the misstep they take. It's perfect.
Yeah. So there's some there's some downsides for sure.
Impunity.
But it's interesting.
There's one or two.
Yeah, one or two. So I think this is the way things are going for sure, and it's interesting to see them actually do it. Especially because like right now, from what I've heard, and I've never been to China, but like I've heard basically WeChat Pay is like all anything, ever uses.
That's the main reason they want to, China wants to launch a national currency, I think, a national digital currency, is because they see that as a direct threat to their currency.
Their power, effectively.
Yeah, makes sense.
Well, their currency, but even just like Jack Ma having power versus them having power, not good. We like to have the power.
Right.
Yeah. We're the people who do this.
Yeah, they're essentially nationalizing WeChat Pay.
Right.
So I see you have a mention here also that PayPal is accepting Bitcoin for merchant payments. Do you guys, I don't know how often frequently you're in PayPal. I'm in PayPal relatively
2007
frequently.
2007 or 8, I think. When did Venmo come out?
Yeah. So I get PayPal because my wife gives my PayPal out to people when, like, you know, friends and family, like, want to get the Apple discount and people have to pay her back or whatever. And she's like, yeah, you just pay Mike's PayPal. So then I end up with cash in there. And I've complained to you guys about how... you know, there's a certain thing when you're designing technology. Are you designing it for the user's benefit, or are you designing it to make as much money as possible? And, you know, some people make compromises on that. Yeah, and some people always do the latter. PayPal is a company. PayPal is the Xfinity and Time Warner Cable of the payment services. They're like, what are we going to do that makes this the worst possible experience that makes us the most money? Oh, so for me to pay somebody out of my bank account using my PayPal account, I can do that, no problem. For whatever reason, for me to take money out, I have to manually re-enter my password, which I don't know what it is.
You need LastPass, so, Mike. Do you not listen to the recommendations?
Yeah.
You need LastPass. No, but this was a whole thing where I'm like, how can I send people money, which is the thing that I would like as most security around as possible, but I can't take money out to my private bank account, which I don't give a shit. If anybody wants to send money to my bank account, go for it. Yeah. I'll give them the information. Yeah. Like, why is that how that's set up? But that was how it was set up. And so that pissed me off, and I was complaining about it. But then I saw, I had like, $900 sitting in that account where, you know, PayPal's collecting interest on it. I'm not, because I didn't bother going down to my computer and finding out where, like, what my login is or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So then I saw, you can buy Bitcoin through this. Well, because we have talked about it before, I'm like, well, you know, I want to be wary of what the fees are for purchasing Bitcoin compared to, like, you know, whatever the reasonable price one would be through Coinbase Pro. And so they're like, oh yeah, you can sign up to this, and you hit the button and like it says no fees to apply, which definitely implies to me that there are a lot of fees.
Yeah.
And there's no fees to click this very button. Small link below. Yeah, it says no fees to apply, very small letters. Click here for schedule of fees. I'll click there for schedule of fees. Okay, this is absurd, the amount of fees also, that are associated when there's with this. This is criminal.
A schedule of fees? That is not bode well.
No. Yeah. No. That was the motivation for me to look up my password and get all of that money out of PayPal and then send some more to my friends over at Coinbase.
Nice.
Yeah. PayPal, I don't know. I have mixed feelings on PayPal. I think it's still my default payment thing if I need one. Maybe it's just because most people I know use it and or at least have it. And it's the original. And I feel I don't really understand. I mean, I use Venmo probably even more than PayPal right now. But like, I don't get it. I don't understand why it's better. It doesn't seem any better. It is owned by PayPal, so it's not any different.
It just feels like the more refreshed version.
It does. That's,
like,
you're right.
Like
it
PayPal, does. If I'm on my
Square
computer,
Cash feels even better to me, but no one uses it.
But
that,
I already have a, I think the social, maybe it is in Square, but I don't have a very social network in there. Like I have a number of contacts in Venmo already. So just having that socialized context helps. But if I was to sit down on my computer, I don't even know if you can use Venmo on a computer. It seems like I'd only use it on my app.
No,
I would use
not.
PayPal. And I remember like I would always use PayPal on login. PayPal and email go together. Venmo, mobile, and text messaging go together in my mind. I don't know.
That's fair.
Why? That's just how it works.
This is the actual language. To start buying crypto, let's set up a PayPal Cash account. $0 fee to set it up. Keep money in PayPal. Here's a list of all of the fees.
Why the fuck would there be a fee
like
to set it up?
There's five drop downs.
Like, hey, give us your email.
They're just warning you. It's like signaling that there's going to be fees. Fees coming up ahead.
Hey, spending money with your PayPal Cash account. Cash account. 5% minimum.
5% minimum of what? Wait, what? What is that charge? What do you mean?
Okay, let's see. International transactions, 5%. There's a fee when you send personal payments to friends and family in countries outside of Canada and Europe. Okay. Not sure why.
Yeah,
we'll figure
why
that out.
Would that be?
Transferring money.
Because they can.
Transferring money from your balance. Electronic withdrawal, 1%. Maximum fee, $10. Paper checks, $1.50. Third-party digital wallets, 2.5% fee. Buying and selling crypto, 50 cent minimum fee, $1 to $25 fee.
25 bucks.
Oh, my God.
To buy crypto.
The fee schedule, depending on how much crypto you buy, if you buy a little bit of crypto, $25 to $100 is 2.3%. $100 to $200, 2%. The lowest fee, if you buy over $1,000 worth of crypto in one transaction, is 1.5%.
I mean, you can tell it's
300% of what it costs to do it on
it's
Coinbase.
Targeting, because some places, like I see these fees where it's like, oh, if you're buying $1 million worth of Bitcoin, here's what your fee is. It's like, that's an insane amount of money to spend on it, but like obviously PayPal is not targeting people that know what they're doing or that are interested. Right. It's just like the casual, they're penalizing you almost because you're dumb enough to use their service to get into crypto because you've heard about somebody talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's frustrating.
Yeah. As someone like you who has multiple ways of buying crypto, you're like, let me just take a glance at this. Nope. Not doing that. I'll move it out.
That sounds absurd.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fucking criminal. Fucking criminal people.
It's ridiculous.
I don't understand. Like, of all the ways
that you
can make money,
like, we give this information for free by telling people, devoting our time to, like, spread the good word about free or lower transaction fees of crypto. PayPal, they know that too, or instead of doing that, they just charge a fee for, they're creating that arbitrage opportunity for themselves because they can just go on to Coinbase, process transactions for like 0.5%, charge somebody else 2%.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I'm going to do? Because I'm a giver.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go on the Twitter right now.
Yeah. Mm. You're going to tweet out your Coinbase link?
No, my that's not a bad idea, actually.
Tweet out my affiliate link.
I don't even know what my affiliate link is, but I'm just going to just tweet out and the message. Public service announcement. Do not use at PayPal to purchase crypto. Use a Coinbase Pro account, period. The fees are 1/3, period.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect.
The world knows now. It's done.
It's just out there.
You know, yep. People helping people, now just, you know.
Sell the NFC of that tweet and be set. I don't know who won that auction. I should check up on that.
Which one? Oh, the John Barron tweet. Oh, yeah, the one you were bidding on.
Yeah. The other stuff we talked about, I think we're good with the crypto corner.
I think we kind of covered everything, yeah.
The John Barron tweet is bid up to $355.
Oh, so good for that guy. You know,
it's not amazing from the former president of the United States' first incognito tweet.
Yeah, well, true, but also it's just some random dude that made it. Like, it was brilliant. He keeps going. I follow him and he's got some funny ones. I mean, yeah. He really does have some pretty good tweets. Like, in the vein of Donald Trump, but also making fun of Donald. I think today's was the Coca-Cola, I guess, doesn't support the Georgia law of, what's the Georgia law doing? Oh,
Voter suppression law in Georgia, yeah.
So they don't support voters. And so he's saying, like, oh, we need, it's Coca-Cola, so disappointing, blah, 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 blah. I'm glad Diet Coke doesn't do the same thing because I couldn't live without that. Like, that could have been a Trump tweet. Like, that's pretty good. yeah. So should we move
housing?
On? Housing?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much we want to talk about this, but I want to just... I was
rent is too damn high.
Everything's too well. I moved to LA, and I thought, like, okay, I'm at least marginally better off economically than when I was in San Francisco, because that was just like a very expensive city. I find myself going on a lot of runs lately, and I run through like not even fancy neighborhoods, just nice neighborhoods where it's like a small, like a little yard, single family house, two or three bedrooms, one or two baths. Like, looking at those, I'm like, oh, that would be nice to own something like that someday.
Yeah.
Of course, when you actually look at, like,
for people, it's a little area called Beverly Hills, if no one's heard of it. It's just a nice little quaint family neighborhood.
Technically, I like the ones the most in Santa Monica, which should be like a sleepy little oceanside town, but it's crazy expensive now. I heard this headline today, though, that LA is considered, at least by, I think the company is Black Knight Analytics. They do a lot of mortgage and real estate analytics. I heard the story through Barron's, and they were saying that LA is the most expensive city now. And the way they measured that is looking at the home prices relative to the median monthly household income. So a place like San Francisco might have expensive housing, but that's offset by all those high tech jobs, the big salaries with that. So the stat that I found
the difference
crazy.
Between that makes sense.
Yeah,
that's so not it's a like, bad what, way of measuring
what,
it.
What does your money actually buy you? Yeah, like right. if the average income in San Francisco is $100,000, in LA it's $70,000, well, you're still like you're essentially adjusting the home prices for that. But it said in those statistics, LA it takes almost 44% of the monthly median income to make mortgage payments.
Mm-hmm.
Which compares to about 20% nationally.
That's a lot.
Is the national average?
20% nationally? So it's double?
Yeah.
More than double.
Yeah.
Wow.
San Francisco is at 37%, so not far behind.
Number in the Flynn household?
That's a good question.
In the Flynn household, if you don't include RSUs, it's 100%.
Wow. But you have to
of take home.
Well,
pay.
Yeah, medium.
Well,
income,
and I don't. I should have looked more in their little slides on this. I don't know if they got into the details, but my guess is they're talking about 43% of, like, not take home, but just like published
salary.
Yeah. What's the salary? So if you're, you've got
but
to
most
adjust
people
for, like,
if they spend 100% of their take home pay on their mortgage aren't doing that.
Well,
Yeah. I didn't even realize that until I said it out loud.
Yeah.
It's just like, wait a second. Disturbing. How do we live? I don't understand.
Wow, but so money, this is what gives me confidence in cryptocurrency. Money's just a made-up concept that you got to, like, you're moving stuff around fast enough and nobody quite catches on what's going on. And eventually you die, so it doesn't matter.
Like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, pretty much. So it's kind of like, I guess it's a good gauge of like most desirable to least desirable places to live, right? So the top percentage is Los Angeles. San Jose is a weird one to be on there as second. Yeah. San Francisco's third. San Diego, okay. Seattle.
I mean, it's all Silicon Valley, right? Like that's.
But then Sacramento.
Yeah.
Who the hell wants to pay up to live in Sacramento? Sacramento. Like Sacramento's above New York. Okay, I'll take New York.
I think it's probably. I mean,
I'll throw it out there. Yeah.
Factoring like the, I mean, two things with the New York one, but factoring like the cost of living or the salary in Sacramento is probably a lot lower.
I get that part, but like, so you're essentially saying like, how much of your salary are you willing to spend on rent?
Yeah, and it's just like the relative
place. Yeah,
changes. Yeah, but New York isn't Manhattan. It's like Newark metropolitan statistic area. True. So I think that's part of it.
It's a good point. Yeah, but Los Angeles is a massive place. So you're talking about about.
Just I'm not even talking about the houses that I'm running by. I think those people are probably paying, and maybe a lot of them are still paying like 40 or 50%. But there are some neighborhoods where I think like somebody buys a $10 million house and they're just like, oh, that's like 1% of my
income. Right. Sure. Sure. And you get that in places like New York and San Francisco and LA. So on the low end, you got Cleveland at 14%.
Yeah.
Cincinnati. Almost a little higher than that, but still 14.
Yeah. Hartford. We have a lot of X cities on this podcast. Yeah. Pittsburgh's the top 10.
Pittsburgh at a little over 15, almost 16.
And Pittsburgh, not that it's good, but the second list they showed with the home price growth rate, like Pittsburgh is a low, it's just like stable, affordable and stable versus like ones that surprised me, like Boise jumped up the most this past year, but it was like COVID induced where people wanted to go out and like find green spaces and open places.
That does make like Boise is a growing. Yeah, that's interesting. I wouldn't thought it was like number one, but it does make sense that, that's a place people are moving to.
Ogden, Utah. That one surprised me too, where it's like number three of the fastest growing. I used to do a lot of work in Salt Lake and Ogden isn't far from there. But 20% growth in price.
Put Ogdenville and North Haverbrook on the map.
We're twice as smart as those people in Shelbyville. You tell us your idea and we'll vote for it. So I just did the quick math. Pittsburgh, I was paying 18% of my salary.
Mm-hmm.
And that was including the taxes on the house. In that mortgage payment. I don't have the taxes in my mortgage payment currently. And as a one income household, not including RSUs and not including cash bonuses, it's 43% of my wife's salary.
You guys are essentially living in LA. Enjoy the sunshine and palm trees. I guess you have palm trees.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have that.
And sometimes.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, man.
Whew. That's why you need. So my conclusion was essentially I need to make the most speculative investments like Bitcoin, SPACs, anything like that's the only way. That's the only way to kind of catch up and maybe I don't want to say win this game, but like to be able to like afford a house with a yard and maybe one or two bedrooms and one or two bathrooms. Like just kind of YOLO gamble all my investments and maybe I'll be able to afford a place to live.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to build it on the ranch. Doesn't really make a difference. Mm,
yeah, true.
I feel like I still want a city house, though. I mean.
Yeah, a pied de terre.
Yeah.
You just stay in Baldwin's ex-girlfriend's places. That's what I did.
Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah, she had that apartment that she never stayed in, and you got to stay in it.
Oh, in San Francisco. Times, I think. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I stayed several times. It was me, her stuffed animals, and her shoeboxes.
Yeah, I mean, it was literally a storage. It wasn't a storage unit, but she treated it as such. And there was a bed there, horizontal too. It wasn't vertical, so you could actually sleep.
That the entire apartment was her bed, 30 gigantic stuffed animals, many shoeboxes, and I think there was a rice cooker.
Probably,
and that was possibly it.
That was it.
Or a lot of green tea. I don't know.
It was a free place to stay, and it's how I conned you into moving
was free.
To San Francisco. Yeah.
It was a great call. It was. I'm still happy to live here. 43% of my wife's income or not.
Nice.
Recommendations.
I was showing off to you guys earlier today my brand new grass green solid shag rug from rugs.com.
Yeah.
Highly recommend it. They've got everything's on sale. It's always on sale. So if you go in and you see a clock ticking down, don't worry. They show two prices. One is full price with a line through it. The other one is half price. You'll always pay the half price, as far as I can tell from looking at the website for the past few weeks. But I got the rug. I got the pad they sell size to go with it. I've done a little bit of redecorating at home, and it's just nice. The grass green, it feels like it's like a backyard indoors. It's perfect. Mm.
Very
That's
nice.
Pretty good. You know, I don't know what my recommendation is this week. I've just been dealing with a bunch of shit that's made me angry all week. Mm. So
maybe meditation.
Meditation? Centering my chi could be good.
Meditation.
Oh, you know what? There's some things that I've recommended before that I've rediscovered that have been interesting. And I've mentioned this one before, but I don't know if you guys remember it. Spark Toro.
Oh, yeah.
You guys remember that one?
Yeah, that's the car thing, right?
No.
No.
That's a different Toro thing. Which is, I think maybe that's just Toro. Yeah. Oh, that's a different. I know what you're talking about.
That's a lawnmower
Spark
company.
Toro. Yeah, that's, well, Jeff's talking, the car rental company is Toro, T-U-R-O. Spark Toro is Spark T-O-R-O.
I thought it was
Turd. The company started by, Turtle, that's Turtle, Turdler. Regardless, this company, what they do is started by this guy, Rand Fishkin, is kind of like the face of it. He's quasi-famous because he's in a bunch of these videos for this company called Moz. And Moz is a well-known SEO software company. And he has this very old-timey mustache, and he would do these whiteboard things about like how SEO works, and so he just like is a personality in this internet community. So he started this thing called Spark Toro, and I had signed up for it but didn't have an immediate need for it, and so I was like, oh, this is cool, I don't really see necessarily a use case. But what you can do is you can type in terms into this thing, and it will kick you back people's social media profiles that utilize those terms in their profiles or that they tweet about or whatever. So like, for example, for Dashy Dash, we want to reach chefs. So I type in chef and it'll drop me 50 profiles of guys who use chef in their handles or in their profiles, and just give me like a list of people that I should be trying to interact with, following or potentially targeting with advertising. So just like a really interesting way to kind of scrape social media. And it's something that Jeff, for something that I know that you've done before in the VC community, you should look at and be like, oh yeah, if we did this instead, that would have been better.
Yeah, that does sound like a good idea. I like it. I'll check that out if I'm ever going to advertise Bubbleword again.
I think as a business, it's a little bit tricky and they're trying to figure it out, because it isn't something that if you're just in one business and you stay in that business that you need to use monthly.
Yeah,
it's like, all right, I got all of these guys. Yeah. And so they have like an inexpensive monthly fee, $50 a month and for 50, and then you can do like 300 or 400 or whatever if you want. Like,
whoever uses this.
Yeah, I know, right? If you want to do like thousands, get lists of thousands of people, like what you would use for advertising targeting, then it's like quite expensive. Or you can get unlimited and pay $450 one time for a week. And so I think there's a business model problem, but it's definitely a valuable service.
Hmm. Very nice. My recommendation this week, you know, we mentioned Ogden, Utah, which, you know, just makes me think of Mormons. And I watched Murder Among the Mormons on Netflix. It's like a 3 or 4 part miniseries. Pretty good. If you're like, it's all about, well, murder, obviously, Mormons. The Mormon church itself, Latter-day Saints, and like the whole, like how much power they have over this community. And then also like collection of old documents and forging of old Mormon documents, which is also sort of that
is
world.
Is that
so...
guy from Pawn Stars on it?
He's not on it. Although there are characters on here who are much better than him. I mean, like, really some very strange people. And the whole thing, like the way that they just the way they live their lives and the way that the church kind of reigns over them. And the whole idea of collecting old Mormon documents, like, oh, this was something that John Smith originally signed. And you're like, okay, like this guy made up a bunch of shit. And you believe
that's why
him.
The documents are so important.
Yeah, well, exactly. Right. So
if they fall in the wrong hands.
How the church sort of like validates and doesn't validate certain documents. Anyway, the whole thing kind of fascinating if you're into any of that sort of thing on Netflix. Worth a watch. Check it out. Nice. Shameless plugs?
Shameless plugs. Bookcase. TWPWK.com.
Bookcasecoffee.com and dashydash.com.
Thebubbleboard.com. Stock bubbles.
Hey, the stock market's going back up.
It is.
Is it now?
We should have talked about that Bill Wang thing. Well, maybe we'll talk about that next week once I understand it all.
Oh, that seems like a good idea, too. Yeah. Can I tell you what the $77 of Pink Shorts money that I invested in crypto is worth today?
I was just looking at some, before you do that, some crypto I bought for $100 in January is worth $156 today.
That's a pretty good return.
Like, I feel like I should have bought more than $100.
Like, what was that, like 1,000,000%?
If I did like 100,000, then I'd be like,
yeah,
yes.
That would have been serious.
So in September 2nd, 2018, so 2.5 years ago, I used $77 from a brain surgeon to pay for short pink shorts, and I bought 0.01042719 bitcoins with that. That $77 is now worth $601.
That's a pretty good return.
A return of 780%.
That is a pretty good return.
Pretty good. Nice. Divided by 2.5 years, that's a 300% per year return.
Like, and that's this is just
I
the
wish
beginning.
People paid me more.
I appreciate this.
Yeah.
All this info, but we're in shameless plugs. You should have mentioned this in Crypto Corner. Obviously,
yeah. We gotta edit a pack.
Another violation.
Yeah, I think you have to owe us a couple of Satoshi penalty.
Right? Yes.
Yeah. Satoshis. What is Satoshi? A tenth of a Bitcoin?
No.
It's like
it's a nothing.
It's a cent, I thought. What?
A Satoshi?
No, but there is a Satoshi.
That's
no, there is. I didn't know
that's
that.
A cent. Those are the, like, so when Mike said like point blah, 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 Bitcoin, you could have instead said like the what I bought that's worth 150,
1.7 Satoshis?
Yeah. It's like,
Huh, okay.
How deep are you into the Bitcoin world right now, Sean? Is like a percentage of your portfolio? We've talked
not very. Huh? I mean, I have like probably $2,000 of Bitcoin. Mm. Now, like $4,000. I'm very slow. Like, when we're talking about it in December, I should have just gone all in, and now it just keeps going up, but I think it'll keep going up more and more. But yeah, I'd like to get to like real. Big dollars in that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm in 7.2 thereabouts.
7.2%?
No, that would be
a lot.
That would be negative. That would be a negative amount of money.
I'm probably at like a little over $4,000 in crypto, mostly in Bitcoin, a little bit of Ethereum, and I hit a snag because I wanted to get into what was the one? It's like the new Ethereum. I forget. We were talking about it recently, but I could Polkadot.
Oh yeah, dot.
But to buy, like, I'll have to sell some crypto to buy that, so that triggers a tax thing, and I have to.
Yeah,
I just want to make sure I track that. It's an added pain in the ass. So I haven't done much in crypto lately, but I don't know. End of year Bitcoin projections to close out the episode.
Oof,
$100,000.
I'm gonna say not 50. Crazy.
Do you think it'll hit 100,000 this year?
No. I think it'll hit 75 though.
75.
Yeah.
But you think it'll close
and then
out
crash like back 50. Down to 50?
I feel like there's got to be a downturn here at some point. And that wouldn't even really be that much of a downturn. I mean, it's at 60 right now. 100. I don't know. It's possible.
All it takes, like, look what the Tesla thing moved it from, what, like 30 to 50? That was one company.
My theory about Bitcoin, and maybe the dynamic changes now that it's more mainstream, but like, so it went from nothing to $2,000, and everyone was just like going nuts. Like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Cause, you know, people had hundreds of these things, you know, when it was worth nothing. And then all of a sudden it was actually worth something. And then it fell back down to like, whatever, a couple hundred dollars. And then it went up on another tear and hit something like 15 grand and then fell back down to like $4,000.
It's like doing this oscillating.
Yeah. And so now we're in peak three of like 60 grand. So does that peak go to 100? I mean, it's very possible because we're at a complete, you know, exponential right now.
Yeah.
But I think we're probably kind of topped out given just the mania around it. And it'll probably fall back down to something like 15 at some point
really?
In the next couple of years. So the question is, like, if that pattern persists, that's what it would do.
Yeah.
The question is, does that pattern persist, or did we cross some sort of precipice where all of a sudden we've got real money against this? You know, that being said, I think it hits 15 and then it goes to 100, but that probably takes another 4 years. That's my theory if this pattern keeps going. My bet would be that pattern keeps going because there's still not really anything to do with Bitcoin. Like, everyone wants it as an investment, but you can't really use it for anything.
But I think it's going to be like the gold standard of crypto.
I agree with that.
So, and it never, even when like the gold standard went away, the crypto or gold still remained valuable. Like, it'll just be the...
Sure, but like it oscillates
China
too, right?
Into it. Yeah.
And I do think it'll eventually...
But it will never have a meaning. Like the same, like you won't be able to make a fancy ring out of it or wear a Bitcoin chain around your neck and show everybody how cool you are.
I already
that's
do that.
Like...
Well, I just bought $500 more, guys.
Nice. Bitcoin or Ethereum?
I've been trying to split evenly between Ethereum and Bitcoin.
I like Ethereum for the smart contracts. Polkadot. Yeah. Start looking at Polkadot, though.
Yeah.
It's still cheap. Yeah, we'll see.
You got to get onto
onto
Binance for that, I think, or Kraken.
Nice.
Crazy.
All of those things definitely sound like scams. Anyway, that's the episode.
That's it.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Worst People We Know was recorded, edited, and produced in the Golden State with a little bit of help from the Sunshine State.
The Sunshine State. Gorgeous.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and find us on Twitter at TWPWK. Thanks.
5, 4, 3, 2,
1.
He looks like he froze, but I'm going to assume he clapped.
I think he clapped. He got the cadence down.
Yeah,
he's got a friend that works for Cascade Cadence Marketing, so he knows.
Yeah, I know that guy.
Am I still frozen?
For the tribe.
A little bit.
Your face is frozen, but
okay.
A little frozen.
It's just an Apple product. It's
like buying a broadband plan to save the day.
Yeah, exactly.
Big deal. Well, then maybe Sean will get an introduction going and we'll do a news topic. Yeah.
Do you not see? Oh, now I see Jeff. That's good.
Oh, there he is. He looks beautiful.
Wow.
Are those automatic blinds? Those look like great blinds.
They're not automatic, but they are nice blinds. Yeah.
Oh.
You have to do manually.
Yeah, I guess
you need blinds and power windows.
In Florida, huh?
Why do houses not have power windows?
You do. Yeah, that's a good question. All right.
All right.
Ready?
Going?
Jeff keeps disappearing, but we'll do it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm still here. Mm.
All right. Nice polo.
Thanks for listening.